Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
You say so often that when you were young, you had to go somewhere else to find a good job. You wanted to bring good jobs to Olathe so your children won't have to leave. If this goes through, they can work at Amazon right across the field. They can even walk to work, and at the starting pay, they may need to. Not what you had in mind for them? Well, I'm sure there are plenty of workers in Commissioner May's district who could hitchhike over for $16.50 an hour plus benefits.
So this is in the conversation at the Escambia County Commission meeting about OLF 8, and that's Teresa Blackwell, who I consider to be the sort of voice of the community. You know, you have the commissioners who have historically been the advocates of job creation on that site, which, of course, was the original intent of it. And then once we had it, and even when it was in the process of being acquired, there were a lot of people in the community who thought, you know, we don't necessarily have to use all of that land just to do jobs. There's other things that we can do on that land. It's an opportunity to create, to plan, to develop, to put in community resources, to create a kind of a town center concept where you would actually have the possibility of building a city of Beulah around it eventually. And then there was the master plan concept where you had a lot of, you know, give and take. And as Commissioner Burgosh particularly likes to remind everybody, they conceded a lot and they created a plan that was not anybody's ideal, but it made everybody willing to vote for it. And the commission so far has vowed that they will sort of hew to the basics of that, or the essence of it. Whether it be all the details, every jot and tittle is a different question. There's some dispute about whether that is true or not, but that's, you know, sort of where we are. And Teresa Blackwell has been the advocate, I think, from the other side of the, you know, from the community, the town center, all of that stuff. And, you know, a journalist in her background and a wonderful woman who's been really fighting a good fight of keeping everybody informed about this and continuing to push for this. Definitely the number one advocate in the community for this issue, speaking about the rumors that there's an Amazon delivery distribution center that's going to come there, or that, and I guess, pardon me, I feel like I'm working on secondhand facts here, but I guess there is one at Ellison Field, and the rumor is that they are going to move there, that's part of this deal. There's actually a couple of proposals to put stuff out on OLF 8, but this is the one that they were most worked up about when they were, but we don't know, because it's all shielded behind this, you know, code word designation, you know, Project Whatchamajiggy or whatever. And so we're left wondering what's going on, which is normal in, you know, the development of these things and economic development, but also frustrating for the citizens where we can't really get our teeth around whether something's a good deal or not. And so we're kind of left with the worst possible conclusions and ignorance and a feeling like backroom deals drive the nature of the outcome rather than full transparency and public participation. Those are kind of generally, if you haven't been paying a lot of attention to OLF 8, that's sort of roughly a lot of the concern. Plus the impact on the neighborhoods that you're talking about, you know, semi-rural communities right there on the north side of the property off 9 Mile Road. On the backside, it's Frank Rita Road, and, you know, school buses and, you know, subdivisions, and not really prepared for all the traffic that would go in off the back, and nobody wants to look at a warehouse distribution site and so forth.
They will need the health insurance, as Amazon work includes a high probability for injuries. In a recent Senate investigation, Amazon had twice the going injury rate for their industry. With unreported industries included, nearly half their workers were injured during rush times like prime promotions and holidays.
And the, you know, question about the wages, because, again, historically, the idea of OLF 8 was to create a space where you could do economic development and get good paying jobs, you know, jobs that are in the $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 range, you know, that are going to really pay Escambia citizens well, not just, you know, something that they can do, seasonal work and or relatively low wage work.
A single mother with one child, $16.50, is about exactly half of the 2024 living wage of $36.04 per hour.
Yeah, and that's part of the problem is, you know, if the wage is that low, then you're really not satisfying the parameters of what's supposed to be being developed out there. You know, she has been raising questions about this particular aspect of the project. Several other people have been expressing their frustration, members of the public, about the secrecy around, for example, Project Dynamo is one of the ones that they're talking about. Dave Merzen, who is a very, very good friend of the station, has been on the show many, many times, somebody that I trust. He's representing First Place Partners, which is this sort of a private public, I don't know how to describe them exactly, but it's a lot of corporate leaders that are involved in First Place Partners, and they, you know, get together and meet about economic development issues to try to figure out what they can do to help sort of improve things. It's not a government agency. I guess I would say it's private, but anyway, it's sort of a local business group that you probably don't hear very much about, but a lot of your sort of big names in local business would be a part of that, and he was representing them.
Half of First Place Partners, a 501c6 organization dedicated to economic development in Escambia and Santa Rosa counties, I'm here this morning to express our strong support for the proposed light industrial development and job creation initiatives in the Northern Commerce section of OLF-8.
And so they are in favor. Rick Byers, who of course used to be with Gulf Power and then FPL and is now actually the interim CEO at Florida West, which is the economic development arm of Escambia County. He was talking about this, saying, first of all, they were not asking for final permission in this meeting. They were asking for continued conversation with some of these companies that have expressed, you know, letter of intent level interest and to keep talking with them. And he said, yeah, the wages are a pretty wide variety. Three projects that they're working on.
Of the three combined, the average wage is $51,841.
Okay, so across the three projects, $51,000. Okay, but there's two high and one low.
The companies, $67,000, $68,000, $780,000, and that company is low because we know they have jobs that pay well over $100,000. And then the one that we're criticizing, the $38,000, that is strictly their starting wage. Right. Okay.
So you have two companies at $67,000 and $68,000 respectively, and one at $38,000. And the one of them at the $67,000 is, you know, that's a low end of what they do as well. And so, how do you evaluate these claims? You know, one of the points that Commissioner Bragash made is that, you know, call center at Navy Federal is pretty low to start, but now they've flourished into something much bigger. $38,000 is pretty low, but if that's only your starting wage, for example, at Amazon or an Amazon type distribution center, then, you know, do you go with just the low wage? Do you go with some average wage across their entire company? You know, if 67 is a start, then, and they go up to over 100, which one do you count? And, I mean, these are all just kind of answering the question of what we're really getting for our leases, I guess, is kind of how we're going to engage in this if we're going to keep control of a large chunk of the acreage. Those are the base numbers. I'm not sure that those represent the, you know, actual impact kind of numbers. So then you get into this conversation by the county commissioners about, you know, well, we've had all these offers and all this time now. I need to write it down because I always forget the exact time, but I think we have owned OLF-8 now for 6 years, 7 years, something in that vicinity. It was right at the end of Jack Brown's term as county administrator, which would put it roughly in the 2017 vicinity, if I'm doing my math right. So we've had it for quite some time. And if you've ever been out there, just to the west of Navy Federal on 9 Mile, John used to be an outlying landing field, of course, for the Navy at Whiting Field, and then we swapped it with them for a big, sweet new field that we built in Santa Rosa County. How many projects have started, broken ground, or completed on OLF-8?
Zero.
That's right. So if you go out there, it is a giant fence and grass.
That's it. I know.
You can't even go out there and ride your horse legally. You know, your ATV, your motorcycle, your flying your kite, none of that because it's just a fenced-off blank space. I have said for years, I think what the county ought to do is at least open it up as a park. You know, just let people use it as, you know, flying their RC airplanes or running their RC cars or, you know, riding their mountain bikes around or, you know, whatever. Kids, let them have their fun, you know, throwing balls for the dogs. At least let it be that until we get something out there. But Stephen Berry says, well, you know, we haven't done anything, but that's just because we've been busy not doing anything wrong.
We haven't had the opportunity to do that yet. That's why nothing's happened on the property. You know, we haven't had the opportunity to place high wage jobs out there yet. So that's why it hasn't happened. You know, we haven't
right.
done anything that's placed, you know, that's done anything negative on the property. We certainly haven't done anything placing, you know, low wages on the property. We haven't had an opportunity to do what we want to do yet, so we haven't done anything.
We have avoided making mistakes. We have not sold it off, carved it off, made it into subdivisions, or done all the different kinds of things that they have been offered to do because they've been holding out for the one or the five, you know, kind of like, you know, that, well, she might make a good spouse, but I want to be sure. And so we have avoided getting into a, you know, what's going to become a problem relationship by just being celibate.
And, you know, and I, you know, I hope it's not, you know, trying to be perfect, being the enemy of good. You know, I don't think we've had that proposal yet that really made sense to put something on the ground. And there has been a commitment from this board to not put something out there that wasn't a good situation.
Yeah. So, you know, in life, sometimes you avoid making a mistake by avoiding doing anything. In life, sometimes you also say, well, the person who does nothing because they're avoiding making a mistake also misses out on a bunch of good opportunities. And other people have raised the question of whether some of the offers have been foot-dragged, slow-rolled, Chinese inspectioned, whatever term you prefer, because they don't like the person. And I think you could make the case that the Fred Hemmer proposal with the Beulah Town Center, which is a very robust, good faith offer, you know, the county commissioners, the three that are still at the moment, still the majority, Jeff Bergosh and Stephen Barry and Lumen May, Fred was apparently a political supporter of Doug Underhill. And, you know, that's enough to get you to never, ever, ever get a deal in Escambia County from those commissioners. That's one view of what's been happening, you know, because you kind of look at what Fred's been offering, kind of look at what they've been coming back with, and you kind of think, well, gosh, he's been working on this for like over a year now, and where are we? And the answer is nowhere, and they keep acting like they don't have the right partner. You know, this is something that Stephen Barry said over and over and over again in the meeting, is how they've never yet had the right partner.
But I think it just comes down to having the right partner that's really wanting to help us check this box, check that box, check that box, and that will come at some point in time.
Like, as in we don't have it yet, as in Fred Hemmer is not it. I mean, he could not have sent the signal more clearly that Stephen Barry will never, ever vote for the Fred Hemmer deal, which, again, I don't understand, because it always seemed like Fred was the good deal. It seemed like he wanted to do what the master plan wanted. He was, you know, made the community happy. But whether it was because it wouldn't produce the end result that they claim it was supposed to, or whether it was because of political retaliation, I mean, you're ultimately one that has to decide about that, what you believe about that. I'm just telling you what, you know, some people think anyway about this particular problem. So then, you know, even Jeff Bergosh said the same thing, like, well, look, we've had a lot of offers. We just haven't done anything because we want to avoid doing the wrong thing.
I would simply say this. We've had no fewer than 10 offers, this board, 10 offers. And we've done nothing.
Yeah, I'd say that's accurate. So what will happen? I don't know. Should anything happen before the results of the November election and then you have new commissioners? Yeah, it seems like not, but it doesn't seem like anything is going to happen yet. Now, I know the critics, kind of Teresa Blackwell and a lot of the other folks who were there who are angry about the distribution center, they felt like a decision was going to be made to put a warehouse distribution center in before the election and the results and the changeover of the county commissioners. I don't think that's going to happen. So that's a little bit of a moot point. But they seemed to be concerned that there was a fast push to get it all done, something done before the election. Which, in fairness, we've seen some of that, like with the rapid push to get the athletic complex in, you know, off of 10 Mile, that seems like that would be a political advantage for Stephen Barry to claim coming up in the election, as opposed to being really the good thing that ought to be done with all that money. But still, you know, those are kind of some of the arguments. I don't think it's likely to happen. We've only got a month. It seems unlikely to me that any kind of deal is going to be made before then, or before the new commissioners take place shortly after that. So that's your quick update. More on this a little bit later, but that's your quick update on OLF. 8:524 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Febreze. As a rideshare driver, I love keeping my car smelling fresh and clean. So when I'm driving, I only trust new Febreze car vent clips, now with 3 times greater scent control, because it's that little touch that sets me apart. I can turn the intensity down for subtle freshness, or I can turn it up for when I want lots of scent. So whether it's set to low, medium, or high, with new Febreze car, I know my car's going to smell amazing. Which keeps my driver rating right where it belongs.
Picking up, Oscar!
Pep Talk? What's Pep Talk?
It's the Pensacola Expert Panel.
Experts? Experts in real estate?
Yes, that's us, Angela. We are the Pep Talk for real estate.
What will we talk about, Will?
We'll talk about the real estate industry.
Well, we don't just want to answer our own questions.
We want to answer the listeners' questions. Tune in today at 10 a.m. and we'll talk about real estate.
And whatever real estate questions you have.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Mom, meet Sarah.
From first time Nana moments.
Yeah, welcome to Flight 101.
To annual girls trip moments. Your can't miss moments are worth protecting against RSV. If you're 75 or older or 60 plus with a chronic condition like asthma, COPD, heart disease, or diabetes, you're at higher risk of being hospitalized from RSV. And there are no prescription RSV treatments. Check eligibility and schedule your RSV vaccine at vaxassist.com.
So where should we go next?
Sponsored by Pfizer.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic updates, but don't always have time to listen to the radio? Well, now you can get text alerts from the News Radio Pensacola app.
My CPU is a neural net processor, a learning computer.
Good morning, 526 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. John, quick question for you. You ever watch the online series The Boys?
Have you seen it? I have started watching that.
Okay, we watched a couple episodes and decided it really wasn't for us particularly. But what do they call the empowered people? I'm deliberately avoiding terminology. The empowered people on that show, what do they call them? Supes. Remember? Supes, okay? Which is short for, what's the normal way we'd describe it? Spider-Man and Aquaman and Batman.
Superpowers.
Superheroes.
Superheroes.
Right? We would say they're superheroes. And then we would say that people with powers who are the bad guys are the super...
villains.
That's right, okay? Unfortunately, there is a trademark issue on the phrase superhero, supervillain. There's actually several different words, phrases connected to all this. And historically, there's a long, long sorted history of how we got to this place. But basically, Marvel and DC have owned the trademark for superhero and supervillain. So a show like The Boys cannot use those phrases because it's a money-making endeavor and it's a trademark phrase. Well, now, apparently they have lost because there is a company that Super Babies wanted to use, and they were supposed to respond to the challenge that it was an open mark that they could use. DC and Marvel missed a deadline, and now at least some of these expressions are in the public domain. So you can just say superheroes, apparently. Superheroes. Two words, and super-villain are still owned by Marvel. Superhero, the single word apparently you're good with, I guess, is how this is working right now. So as long as you say it or print it just the right way, you're okay at the moment to use these phrases. It's kind of like Band-Aid for adhesive bandage or Kleenex for facial tissue or
exactly.
You know, whatever all that. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, the death toll has risen up to at least 190 now across the southeast, with hundreds of people still missing after Hurricane Helene and its remnants went through the region. North Carolina, of course, hit the hardest by all the flooding there. The majority of fatalities counted have been in North Carolina, and property damage now estimated to be in the billions of dollars. Third person pleading guilty in the death of actor Matthew Perry. Dr. Mark Chavez pleaded guilty in Los Angeles yesterday to one count of conspiracy to distribute ketamine as part of a plea agreement. Attorneys accused the doctor of illegally obtaining ketamine that was sold to Perry. Chavez could face up to 10 years in prison. And the strike by dock workers appears to be causing some panic buying already. The strike has closed down ports along the East Coast and the Gulf of Mexico. Ships remain idling offshore, and now there's reports that retailers are seeing a big demand for things like, of course, toilet paper.
Of course. Which is made here, by the way. I don't think we import toilet paper. That's kind of one of the ironic things, is that people are getting all worried about the scarcity of a product that doesn't come in by container ships.
Yeah, it's manufactured here, but do any of the manufacturing components come from overseas? Possibly?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, but I would think not. I mean, it's all just wood-based, right? So I would think not.
Think.
But
there,
you never know. Yeah. I mean, it's true in the modern economy. I do see these occasionally snarky posts on Facebook about how, you know what doesn't come in by container ship? Stuff made in the U.S., meaning, you yeah. know, maybe if you buy stuff made in the U.S., we're better off. Oh, we're getting a couple of texts in on the OLF 8. Somebody says, oh, my God, we're doing so great because we're doing nothing. And somebody else said, also remember, Andrew, that 100 acres got carved off of the original size of OLF 8 to give to Navy Federal to build that park. And the park is fantastic, no doubt. It's almost like we could have let Navy Federal develop the land. Maybe.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa, striking longshoremen and women on the picket lines. Day three of the massive strike at 36 major ports.
The New York Times reports that the executive director of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey says some 100,000 containers will be tied up in the port with 35 ships waiting offshore over the next week.
That's Fox's Doug Luzada reporting this morning. President Biden visits communities in Florida and Georgia today, decimated by Hurricane Helene. Yesterday, he toured western North Carolina, vowing help.
Congress has an obligation to ensure the states have the resources they need.
Vice President Harris stopped in Georgia yesterday. She's back on the campaign trail today, stopping in a Republican stronghold in northeastern Wisconsin. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. A man is in the hospital after a shooting near Fairfield Drive in Escambia County. That happened about 9:30 last night. The victim was taken to a local hospital. Right now, there's no word on his current condition. Deputies say, as of yet, there's no suspect in custody. An investigation is underway. The Okaloosa County Sheriff's Office is investigating after a teenager said she was sexually assaulted inside of a Fort Walton Beach storage unit this week. The teen said she'd left a soda outside of a local convenience store while talking to a friend, then said after she retrieved it and started drinking it, she became woozy and passed out. The girl said she woke up in a storage unit being sexually assaulted. She described the suspect as a 6'2" black male with dreadlocks and a full beard. She said the man drove a white van and dropped her off afterwards on Eglin Parkway. Anybody with information is asked to contact the Okaloosa County Sheriff's Office or Emerald Coast Crime Stoppers. Well, it's day three now of the dock workers' strike at a number of major ports along the Gulf and East Coasts, causing disruptions in the movement of goods across the country. While workers in Mobile at their port are striking, the Port of Pensacola is not being directly affected.
Yeah, no direct impact. I don't want to speak for, you know, vendors that are on port that it might affect them, that kind of, there might be some kind of indirect, but in terms of city operations and things like that, there's no impact.
And that's Pensacola Mayor D.C. Reeves. The union representing dock workers says they're looking for higher wages and a ban on port automation that they say could threaten their jobs. Analysts estimate the strike could cost the U.S. economy roughly $5 billion per day. Senator Rick Scott laying the blame for the recent Iranian attacks on Israel on the Biden-Harris administration.
4 years ago, Iran was weak, broken, powerless. Now, what's happened is, you know, with this appeasement effort by Biden and Harris, what's happened is Iran saw a lot of money. They've given it to Houthis, Hezbollah, Hamas.
And Scott criticized Biden's calls for a ceasefire, saying Israel has a right to defend itself and says that they're not the ones who caused the problem in the Middle East. Scott said, when our allies are attacked, it's also an attack on America. Well, the death toll up to 175 now across the southeast. Hundreds are still missing after Helene and its remnants hit the region. Vice President Harris yesterday went to Georgia.
The president and I have been paying close attention from the beginning to what we need to do to make sure the federal resources hit the ground as quickly as possible.
And areas of North Carolina have just been devastated by flooding. Bacumbi County authorities say the death toll there has risen to almost 60, property damage estimated to be in the billions. Over a million people in that area are still without power. It is 534 at News Radio 92.3.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. We do have a small chance of rain as you go throughout the day today. 30% overall, otherwise partly cloudy skies with a high near 85 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 70 degrees. Rain chances increasing on Friday, 60% chance of rain, high near 83. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 70. For the weekend, we will have small rain chances, 30% chance of rain on Saturday, 84 degrees for your high, low near 69. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. It is 71 degrees now in Pensacola and in Gulf Breeze, 68 reported in Milton. Our next news at 6, breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Natural gas producer EQT Corporation has announced that it will lay off 15% of its employees by sometime next year. The staff reductions include former executive officers and some senior employees. EQT said severance payments, stock-based compensation, and other benefits for terminated employees will cost the company up to $185 million. UPMC is asking a federal judge for a 16-day extension to respond to the Department of Justice's backing of a lawsuit that accuses the healthcare giant of suppressing wages and controlling labor markets through monopolization. This gives the company until October 23rd. Aura has announced the Aura Ring 4, which is available for pre-order starting at $349. The company said the new smart ring features more accurate sensing technology, a sleeker design, and up to 8 days of battery life. The company is also rolling out a new design for its app that will be available to all Aura members. Futures are slightly lower. That's Your Money Now.
News Radio 92.3 congratulates the recent winners and finalists in the 2024 Pensacola News Journal Community Choice Awards.
Here is one of the recent winners who can say they are the best of the Bay.
Hall's Hardware has been honored to be nominated for Best Hardware Store by Best of the Bay 2024. They want to thank their hardworking staff as well as their loyal customer base and remind you they offer a great knife selection as well as an amazing variety of wind chimes and gifts. Hall's Hardware, 6606 Highway 90 in Milton.
Congratulations to all the Best of the Bay winners.
DeFranco Gas is your local expert in all things gas. Local Tom DeFranco and Company has been installing and servicing your gas-powered business and home needs for over 38 years and is here to help make your gas life easier. Tankless water heaters, gas grills, gas fireplaces, gas heating systems, and DeFranco Gas gets your home and business storm ready with installation and servicing of whole generator systems. All things gas. DeFranco Gas, your local gas service provider. Member of the Better Business Bureau. DeFrancoGas.com.
News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 is accepting applications for employment. Periodically, we have openings in sales, business, news, promotions, engineering, production, and programming. We'll keep your application for consideration when such an opening occurs. We also provide internships for qualified students. Apply online at News Radio 92.3 or at our studios at 7251 Plantation Road between 8:30 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. ADX Communications is an equal opportunity employer.
Hurricane Helene threatens the Gulf Coast.
Hurricane warning all along Apalachicola and the Big Bend area.
When you need to know.
I just saw something flash across the screen that there's a tropical storm warning for South Walton County.
When warnings go up, News Radio 92.3's full team coverage goes into overdrive.
Helene has a different story for everybody. Storm surge 20 feet around Cedar Key.
Hurricane season is not over yet. When you need to know. News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, 5:38 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's a Pensacola Morning News, and as we typically do on a Wednesday, yesterday we had a good conversation with Mayor D.C. Reeves about homelessness, some of the ways he wants to use some of the federal ARPA funds, and also what it even means to talk about affordable housing and if those terms are even meaningful. Mayor Reeves, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Thank you, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Just, I want to kind of get this out of the way because I know it's a question a lot of people have asked, and I just want to make sure to get a definitive answer. Yeah. The port workers' strike, the longshoremen strike, basically does not affect us because we don't have unions and we don't do container ships at the Port of Pensacola, right?
Correct. Yeah, no direct impact. I don't want to speak for, you know, vendors that are on port that it might affect them, that kind of. There might be some kind of indirect, but in terms of city operations and things like that, there's no impact.
Right. And I just wanted to make sure that I had that right because, you know, like I said, a lot of people have asked me and I wanted to be sure to ask you. So I appreciate that. On the question of homelessness, if you and I talked a lot about last week and the new anti-camping ordinance that's in effect from the state, the one that you guys are proposing at the city council meeting and are going to talk about that next time there's a rescheduled one because you had to cancel last week because of the hurricane. One of the things you talked about this yesterday during your press conference is the kind of small scale, I don't want to call them modular, but they're like tiny huts, but they're maybe $15,000 to $20,000, small, like 70, 80 square feet kind of thing. What is this all about? What are you trying to accomplish here?
Yeah, so just let's look quickly at the evolution of how we got here. First of all, you remember we've had conversations about low barrier shelter, something that I still very much support the concept of. We went and found someone who was running one in Florida and said, okay, tell us what it would take. Remember, we got about we have about $1 million socked away in ARPA, one-time money. And so I've kind of earmarked that for this conversation.
Yeah.
So we have that conversation as a community. John DeCarmine comes in and says, not only will you need a building and need it retrofitted, you'll need another 1.7 to 2.5 plus per year, depending on beds and size, to operate it. So clearly, as I kept saying after that, was that a low barrier is going to take like a huge community conversation. Our healthcare partners, our business partners, the city, the county.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not going to be solved with $1 million of one-time money.
And by the way, so can I pause you just for a second? Just because I know there's people who haven't followed this conversation for a long time. When you say a low barrier shelter, you're saying a kind of shelter where it doesn't turn you away because you're high or drunk or because, you know, you have all kinds of reasons. It's basically anybody can come. And we just don't really have that kind of a facility right now. And so how do you solve for the people who can't go to Waterfront or, for example, you know, because of whatever reason? That's the low barrier concept. Anyway, just wanted to, people who might not know that, I wanted to make sure they're in the conversation. Go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, in low barrier, it's misperceived as you can do whatever you want when you're there. That's absolutely not the case. You described it correctly. It's just, it doesn't matter what your religion is. It doesn't matter what your situation is. It's about getting you off the street and getting you help. And that, and obviously, if folks that follow the issue as a whole know that this is something that every community is struggling with, that's certainly a need, is to increase our scope of being able to get people off the street and into some kind of help, of their circumstances. So phase two of that, once we had that conversation, realized really $1 million is going to be a drop in the bucket to start that. And the last thing I want to do is start a low barrier shelter halfway. I mean, that's just that would not be good use of taxpayer money. It wouldn't be good for the community. So we said, okay, well, what can we do? We have the House Bill 1355 on the way. There is some unfunded mandate.
That's the anti-camping bill. Go on.
So what do we do? Well, we looked at this and pivoted to this as a how can we increase bed capacity today? Like, what can we do now? And so I'm committed to spending this $1 million of ARPA funding, federal funding, that would help buy these shelters. And these are wind rated for Florida. They say 75 degrees in 120 degree weather. What I would like to do with them is put them in places where our current nonprofit providers have case management. Maybe they've got bathrooms. Some of these are built with bathrooms, and of course the cost goes up when you do that. But these are things that could be implemented and triaged out now, relatively speaking. So, you know, there's kind of like, here's how we can, if we can get a couple more beds at our nonprofit for people who are ready to have their own space, what does that do? It frees up a couple more beds inside, maybe on the intake side, or someone who's just coming off the street now has somewhere to go. So it's trying to kind of relieve that pressure valve of bed space. So when our community response people see someone downtown, we can that much more confidently say to them, hey, listen, I've got a place for you. You know, and it's not always the deniability of, well, you know, yeah, I would take help, but there's nowhere to go.
Yeah.
So we get, you know, that's how we want to be part of that solution. And to me, in spirit, it's us trying to adhere to an unfunded mandate. And certainly you'll hear me over the next few months when legislature begins that I certainly would like that to become a funded mandate if that's something that they're going to be asking the city and county to do.
Okay. No, that's really interesting. And they're roughly the size of what you might think of as a small backyard shed. You know, obviously much more sturdy than that, as you said, rated for wind in Florida, which is a great side bonus. But the idea is placing these, and by my rough math, we're talking about maybe in the vicinity of 50 units for $1 million, something like that, maybe 40, 70, whatever. And so finding providers who help the homeless right now and giving them kind of an outside alternative for a lower barrier entry instead of inside. And no, that makes perfect sense. And it's federal money, so you got to spend it or it goes away. And to solve this problem. No, that's very interesting. All right. So that I appreciate that. And that's something that you're going to have to get voted on by the city council, or that's something you can just do?
Yeah, we'll have to change the we have to get the bid, whoever will win the bid. It's an RFP now.
Oh, gotcha.
Obviously,
okay.
Like you said, it's got to be encumbered by December 31st. So if we do this right, then what's nice is we don't have to actually implement that by December 31st. So we don't have to take collection. We don't have to take donation and put them in a lay down yard somewhere on December 31st. We're actually able to triage them out as needed.
Okay. Okay. So,
basically drop ship them into different locations.
Okay. So RFP now, city council approves that request for proposal. Correct. So you pick a vendor and then you encumber the money. It's targeted to that. So you secure it from going away. And then over the course of time, correct, as you need them or find people who are able to, agencies that are able to handle them, you can put 3 or 4 or 10 in the right place. That makes perfect sense to me. I'm glad
and
you explained
that.
Have
them there immediately and built immediately.
No, that's nice. Excellent.
They could be taken up and down in hours. Not days.
Mr. Mayor, you know I've been wanting to have this conversation with you for a while. I did an extended conversation a couple of months ago about my critique of the terms affordable housing, attainable housing, that I get so tired of hearing this term because when it comes up, it sounds vague and undefined, and everybody says nobody agrees about what the definition is. And my thought is, okay, well, then let's stop using these words. Right. And let's instead find a different way to talk about it. Either we just talk about the rate of rent for the housing or the rate of, you know, ownership, whatever, for the housing. Or maybe we create some other kind of label, brackets, like Alpha would be, you know, the lowest 20% of earners can afford this. And Bravo would be the next 20% of earners. Mm-hmm. Up to Echo would be the luxury housing or something. Some way of talking about where our housing supply is, what's really missing, instead of this eternal, nebulous, everybody knows it's not a good term, affordable/attainable housing.
I think that's very astute. As a matter of fact, that's something that we discussed. I was at the leadership conference with U.S. Conference of Mayors that I've just got elected to, and the number one initiative for the current president, Mayor Ginther, out of Columbus, Ohio, is housing. So he actually had, if you look at it, there's a very good report I suggest anybody engaged in this subject should read. It's called The State of Housing, and it's put out by Harvard every year, and it goes real deep into trends, you know, how many multifamilies being built, for what age, all sorts of things. And so they came in, the leader of that group came and presented to us as mayors. Then Pew Research came and presented to us as mayors. Here to add another layer of complexity to what I think you make a very valid point. I agree with you. We have a kind of a communication problem.
Yeah.
Let me add a layer of confusion. The issue is, to really solve housing, we need housing at every level. What happens is we're so short-sighted as a society, and we say, well, if 100 market rate units get built in our community, oh, well, then that's only serving this sector of people, not me. The reality is, as this report would reinforce, is for every 100 market rate units that hit our market in Pensacola, within 2.5 years, it actually opens 41 affordable units. So when you hear that term missing middle, let's talk about another generic term that people really don't know what it means. What we really need to be working on is this workforce missing middle housing, and it actually helps solve at every level. And so that's, I think, yes, you're absolutely correct. I think we have a problem with how we define affordable, and it's going to be very hard for us to come up with those terms because it means something to everybody. It's different.
That's why I'm saying let's take ownership of the problem. You know, as you often say, I didn't create the problem, but maybe I can make a difference.
Right.
And instead of continuing to play the language game of a sort of complaining that it means a different thing to everybody.
Right.
Let's create categories. Let's come up with a language to talk about this. Because look, every community is going to have a slightly different kind of or shape of need, right? And if, again, I'm just sticking with the ABCDE kind of housing. You know, let's say what you need is 20,000 alpha minimum wage type housing, which could be subsidized, whatever. But it's somebody who with a minimum wage job, maybe they can afford to live in it. You know, 40,000 Bravo, 100,000 Charlie's. You know, like, then you could say, okay, this is what we need. This is what we have. Where's the mismatch? Where should we be building? Where should we be emphasizing? And no, I totally agree with you that any stock is going to generally improve everybody's access. But at the same time, right, we can be smarter about, again, talking about where the lack is, who's not able to secure housing, at what level, and where does it really need to be built?
Sure. And look, but if we snapped our fingers and had those categories and that gave us more clarity as as it pertains to what we're building, there still will be this us versus them, winners versus losers mentality until we also understand the second point, which is truly, I mean, and look at what we're doing. We take the Motor Lodge and turn that into 60, 70% veteran housing. We take the Malcolm Young property and put in the Community Land Trust. We look at Baptist Hospital. We look at trying to support market rate units at Maritime Park. So our strategy has been come one, come all, because we understand that to create true affordability, that cannot be done. Our housing crisis will never be solved by doing one sector or the other. But even if we clearly define what those sectors are, I'm either in it or I'm not in it.
Yeah.
Until we all understand that there's a mix, and certainly I think that's what we've shown, is to say, let's be opportunistic as we can, whatever property we can control, and then how we can use that as a subsidy to create that, you know, housing that otherwise wouldn't be there. And so you identifying that as a dilemma is undoubtedly. I had conversations about that with other mayors across the country. That same thing, just because I'm
awesome.
an old newspaper guy, right?
Yeah.
How do we better communicate, you know, what we're trying to do? So I 100% agree with that. But we also need to understand concept and policy. And that is where, I mean, it's always surprising to me. You know, we'll announce a workforce housing initiative and it's like, well, wait, why are you doing that? Or wait, you know, are they going to be built cheaply? There's just always this negative connotation, and in some ways understandable negative connotation about any of these aspects going in.
And I think it
makes it tough for sure.
And I think, honestly, I think if you created a clarity in the language, it might be easier to get people to understand why the policy is going. And maybe the clarity isn't A, B, C, D, E. Maybe the clarity is this is 40,000 a year household income housing, or this is 60,000 a year household income housing. You know, like maybe even just numbers are a more helpful way to think about it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but it strikes me that it's going to be hard to get buy-in on some of the policies until you have people with a better clarity of what's being accomplished. And even though terms like workforce or market rate housing, those might be terms that they may make sense to D.C. Reeves, I don't think they make sense to the average person. And that's, you know, as you know, in communication, it's does the recipient get it? So I just wanted to run that by you, and I'm glad to hear that you're already thinking about that. And, you know, just I thought it was a useful conversation that we might have for a second. And, you know, so good to hear that you're.
Yeah, and I think that's another good topic for us, you know, to talk about at length, you know,
absolutely.
And answer some of those questions, you know, I think not just for the city, but just
in general.
What is the perception out there in our county, in our region?
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
I think it'd be really interesting to have that conversation.
We always like to end with a quick lightning round. First question is, did you ever read comic books? If so, who was your comic book hero?
You know what? Yes. My brother collected them. So, of course, he was 14 months older. I started collecting them. You know, I was always a Batman guy in the comic books or X-Men, too. But I had the number one Silver Surfer at some point. It's in an attic somewhere.
All right.
The first. Silver Surfer number one.
Get that thing graded, man. You might be worth something.
That's right.
When somebody warns you, either on TV or online, like you're surfing Instagram or whatever, this video may be disturbing to some viewers. You automatically click through, or do you turn it off?
I mean, I'm a human being, Andrew. It's hard.
It guarantees you're watching it, right?
Don't tell me you're so noble that you always turn away from that.
Oh, no, man. That's 100% click it open, right? That's the whole point. You're glued to the TV now.
That's like guerrilla marketing now.
That's,
you know,
exactly.
Show that
it is.
Guaranteed someone's going to watch it.
Guarantee they're going to watch. Last one, and this is a really divisive topic, but here it goes. Is Five Guys fast food or not fast food?
Oh, man, that's a tough one.
Thank you.
I'm gonna say no. I mean, is Chipotle fast food? Yeah, I think to me it's like a fast casual I say no. I'm going to say no.
You're going to say no. See, I lean in your direction. I know it makes John upset, but, you know, I like to hear that we've made a comeback from last week's caramel or whatever.
thank goodness.
D.C. Reeves, the mayor of Pensacola, as always, a pleasure, sir. We'll talk to you again next week. Thank you for the time, sir.
All right. Hey, thank you.
Absolutely. 5:54 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Somebody had texted me in and said, Andrew, why didn't you talk about Bruce Beach with him? There's always stuff I don't get to. I mean, they've closed down, or they've said that there's been testing at Bruce Beach that shows that we have pollution from human sources. Let's just say it that way, which has historically been a bit of a problem in that area. And now the grand opening of the facility, the next phase of the facility, that's been delayed pending an investigation into all of this. A lot of theories about all that, but I think we're overlooking the most obvious explanation.
I want the entire pool scrubbed, sterilized, and disinfected. Here it is.
Ah!
It's no big deal.
Oh!
And then the sound of Bill Murray jumping. That's just a baby Ruth, you hope. 5:55 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
For some of us, it's way more than just hunting. Hunting is one of the best things in life, and Jim's Firearms is proud to be a part of it. Let the team at Jim's Firearms help you prepare for a successful hunting season. With a large selection of shotguns and rifles, you're sure to find one to meet your shooting needs. Jim's Firearms, West Pensacola, corner of Blue Angel and Sorrento Road.
Parrish packages are back, and they're featuring the number one compact tractor in the United States, the Kubota L2502 with quick attach loader, Land Pride 6-foot cutter, and Land Pride 6-foot disc, all for $29,999 cash or as low as $385 a month. Doesn't include tax, fees, or insurance. Plus, you get a free pipe top trailer. Visit them at 6701 Mobile Highway. Parrish Tractor, one of the largest Kubota dealerships in the country. 0% APR financing now through 9/30/24. See them or go to KubotaUSA.com for more information.
News Radio 92.3 congratulates the recent winners and finalists in the 2024 Pensacola News Journal Community Choice Awards.
Here is one of the recent winners who can say they are the best of the Bay.
Scenic Hills Country Club thanks you, Pensacola, for naming us Best of the Bay 2024. We are honored and enjoy providing you with a first-class experience on the course and in the dining room. Visit scenichills.com to plan your visit. We look forward to seeing you soon.
Congratulations to all the Best of the Bay winners.
New South Window lives southern weather, and our products are designed to keep the intense heat out and the cool air in. We prioritize keeping your family and your home comfortable all year round. That's why our energy-efficient windows and doors are made, installed, and guaranteed for life.
For a limited time only, save 35% off on New South Windows and Doors. Visit newsouthwindow.com/radio to learn more.
Don't wait until it's too late. Tune in to News Radio Pensacola for the latest hurricane coverage on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
You hear that, Boris?
I'm not deaf, Natasha. Dumb maybe, but not deaf.
Boris is more of a knucklehead. 5:58 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says Israel is, quote, at the height of a difficult war against Iran's axis of evil, end quote. Netanyahu made those comments yesterday after 8 Israeli soldiers were killed while fighting in South Lebanon against the Iranian-backed Hezbollah militant group. It's the biggest loss by Israel on the Lebanon front in the past year. The FAA says it's finished its safety investigation into United Airlines without finding any significant flaws. United was under scrutiny since last spring when it was plagued by some safety-related incidents like a stuck rudder and a plane losing a tire on takeoff. The FAA now ending its enhanced oversight of the airline. and Pink Floyd selling the rights to their recorded music to Sony. That deal reportedly worth $400 million and also includes name, image, likeness rights.
And the members of Pink Floyd are all, what, late 70s? Right? I mean, something about like that, roughly. Yeah. So, yeah, roughly. There you go. Oh, by the way, just a small note. The Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, as part of the ramp up of troops going to the Middle East to, you know, just in cases, we're sending in F-16s, F-15s, F-22 Raptors, and A-10 Thunderbolts. Maybe they should have kept making them. They're so useful in these kind of environments.